Hare Krishna. Welcome to the Mahabharata character series. We are continuing with our discussion on Bhishma Pitamaha. So, naturally when we discuss these different characters, their lives will overlap. And when the lives overlap, we will discuss certain incidents very briefly in one character's life, just to have the narrative flow going on. And we will discuss those incidents in more in detail when we are discussing another character, because they are having more relevance in that character's life. So Bhishma is a character whose presence extends almost to the entire Mahabharata, at least the entire parts of the Mahabharata that are of most significance. So that's why, while we are discussing his life, we are more or less sketching out the whole story of the Mahabharata in an outline, and we will be emphasizing those parts of the story which feature Bhishma in a central role. And the other parts of the story we will discuss later. So, we stopped last time at Kindam Rishi cursing Pandu, saying that just as when I was in the act of procreation, you shot me and killed me, but you did it ignorantly, you did not know that I was a human being, so you will not be punished with death. But in the future, if you decide to unite similarly with your wives, then you will die at that time. And saying this, Kindam Rishi departed from the world. And his wife also departed with him. And from that time, Pandu took a very severe vow of celibacy. And both his wives helped him to maintain that vow. But somehow, after 15 years of celibacy, he got attracted to Madri. We will discuss that incident later. And then he passed away. And Madri also departed with her, with him. And Kunti came back to Hastinapur. And in this way, Bhishma, he became the caretaker, the surrogate father. He was actually the grandfather, but he had to act like the father of the Pandavas because there was no other male figure. And till this time, because Pandu had departed from the kingdom and his sons had not played any role in the kingdom at that time. So, Bhishma as well as the Kuru elders were training Dhritarashtra's sons, especially the eldest son Duryodhana, to become the successor. And Duryodhana was a very pampered child and he was also not very well behaved, not very cultured. And because of this, he often was displeasing to others. But still, because he was going to be the successor, everybody was pampering him, taking care of him. But when the Pandus came back, Pandavas came back, the sons of Pandu, now they were very cultured, very gentle, very respectful, very kind-hearted. And the contrast between the characters of the Pandavas and the Kauravas was apparent to everyone. And naturally, the Pandavas won the hearts of people. And they won the heart of Bhishma also. Bhishma loved both the brothers set, Pandavas as well as the Kauravas. But naturally, because the Pandavas did not have a father, he took more care of them. And moreover, because they were so virtuous and so kind and so refined and so gentle and so cultured, naturally, they became more occupied more of a place in his heart. Still, he took care of both of them and he arranged to train them personally. Then he engaged Drona when Drona appeared to train them. And as he watched them grow, both the sets of brothers to become worthy successors of the Kuru dynasty. But unfortunately, they were not to live in harmony. And as due to Duryodhana's envy and his hunger for power, incited as he was further by the evil schemes that Shakuni hatched, and he was infatuated by the power of Karna, he tried conspiracy against the Pandavas. And Bhishma was left to just watch. He was such a powerful Kshatriya, but he could do nothing. Bhima was poisoned, and at Yudhishthira's council, the Pandavas did not speak anything. Now, Bhishma was a shrewd diplomat. He could observe the tensions, But he was hoping that things would not go to a great extreme. And eventually, so on Shakuni's scheming, the Pandavas were sent to Varanavart. And when the Pandavas were sent to Varanavart, there they stayed, and then the house of Lakh was burned. And coincidentally, at that time, an Ishada woman who had 5 children had come there, and she had drunk a lot, and she had fallen in a drunken stupor at that time when the fire was set. And because of that, everybody thought that the Pandavas had been killed along with their mother Kunti. And Bhishma's heart was shattered. Pandu had passed away, now his wife had passed away, and now her children had passed away, and he felt himself responsible. And he could see the condemnation in the eyes of the citizens also. The citizens could make out that this fire was no accident. It was an act of arson. And they considered the royal family with a conspiracy within it responsible for this. And Bhishma later on tells Dhritarashtra, "Oh Dhritarashtra, do you know what is happening?" So actually the Pandavas survive and they have many adventures. Eventually they win the hand of Draupadi. And when they allied with Drupada, at that time, they reveal their identity. The Pandavas are there. And Dhritarashtra is now faced with a conflict. What to do? Duryodhana has been ruling like the king, and Dhritarashtra has been officially the king since Pandu had departed, and the Pandavas had also gone off the scene. The Pandavas had reappeared. So what to do? So Dhritarashtra was consulting with his ministers and his counselors, and Bhishma told him that call back the Pandavas and give the kingdom back to them. Do you know what the citizens are talking? Do you know how they are blaming you and all of us elders for the injustices that had happened against the Pandavas? Now, since the time Pandavas were rumored to have passed away in fire, you know, I felt ashamed to come in public to face the people with the anger and the condemnation in their eyes. Now is the time for you to set right the wrongs that have been done. Call the Pandavas back and give them the kingdom. Give them half of the kingdom at least, so that you will be able to have your rule for the Kauravas and for the Duryodhana, and the Pandavas will also have the rightful share. So Bhishma, Vidura, Drona, they all counsel like this. And Dhritarashtra realized that what they were saying was right. And he called back the Pandavas and he gave them half of the kingdom. But he gave a barren wasteland that was the Khandavaprastha. And Bhishma noticed the unfairness of the settlement. Suppose a father is a millionaire and the father has 2 sons, and one son is given one half of the, say, is industry is worth $1 million. And say $500,000 worth of industries are flourishing, and $500,000 worth of industry are almost on the verge of perishing, are not at all profitable. So if one son is given the flourishing half and the other son is given the perishing half, naturally that would be considered unfair, even an outrageous settlement. But Yudhishthira was so virtuous that he accepted it. He considered his elders to be like God and he accepted their word. The Bhishma seeded the unfairness of the settlement, but he had taken a vow to serve the ruling monarch of Hastinapur, and he was compelled to obey that, monarch's will. He could only give good counsel, but when he had taken that vow before Satyavati's father, that he would always, not only would he nor he ever usurp the Hastinapur king, nor would he ever have sons who would usurp the Hastinapur king, he would always remain faithfully a servant of the Hastinapur king. He had never thought that such a thing would happen, where such a conspiracy would be hatched by the Hastinapur rulers and he would have to stand by their side because of his vow. But by Krishna's mercy, Khandavaprastha was, through the arrangement of Maya Dana, transformed into Indraprastha. And then when the Pandavas decided to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, the 4 Pandavas went in 4 directions and they won over all the kings in the world, and then they brought the tributes to Yudhishthira, and then the Rajasuya game was performed at that time. That was the crowning glory of not just Yudhishthira's kingdom, Yudhishthira's life, but also Bhishma's life. Bhishma remembers this in the last moments of his life when he is about to depart from the world. Rajasuya Esham, he says that when I was present in that assembly when Krishna was worshipped as the Agra Purusha, as the Agra Puja, the worship that is offered to the topmost person was offered to Krishna. And Bhishma remembers that day. So Bhishma was delighted to see the success of the virtuous Pandavas, and not only that, he was delighted to see the glorification of the Supreme Lord, because that ultimately was his heart's longing, that they be glorified forever, that the Lord be glorified and his devotees be glorified. And when this magnificent Rajasuya sacrifice was performed, Bhishma was also one of the elders who was assisting in the sacrifice. And then when the bathing, Avabhrit bathing was done for Yudhishthira and Draupadi, and then the Agra Puja was to be performed. So who was to be chosen as the person? There was a lot of discussion going on. And Sahadeva proposed that yes, in this assembly are great sages. There are even the gods over there. But no one is greater than Krishna, because Krishna is Vishnu himself. And he is the greatest of all great personalities. And it is him to whom we should offer the Agra Puja. And when Sahadeva spoke this, the whole assembly erupted with approval and joy. And Bhishma's heart flooded with more and more joy on seeing this. And yet there were the envious who became not just silent but enraged, and they exploded. Leading among those envious was Shishupal. Chaidyadaya Nripa, the Bhagavatam describes this king of Chedidesh, Chaidya, and others. So Shishupal said, we thought that Yudhishthira was an intelligent king, and that's why we have agreed to offer tributes to him. But this Krishna, no one knows his Varna. No one knows who is his parent. He lived as a cowherd. And he runs away from a battle. He's ran away from Jarasandha so many times. Now what is his heroism? He said, a blaspheming Krishna like anything. And at that time, when he spoke like this, the king started getting agitated. Many of the kings were pious, and they could not tolerate this blasphemy. Not just because some of them knew that Krishna was the Supreme Lord, but they knew Krishna was a powerful ruler, and they did not like this criticism at all. But Shishupal just went on, and finally Bhishma spoke. And Bhishma said that, actually, how can you consider Krishna not worthy of glorification? And this is the time when Bhishma elaborately glorifies Krishna. But this is the first time in the Mahabharata that Bhishma gets an opportunity in a public forum to speak the glories of his beloved Lord. Bhishma is a Mahabhagavat, a great devotee, and he knows the glories of Krishna and he relishes these glories, and he started speaking the pastimes of Krishna, mentioning them in outline right from the childhood. How Krishna killed so many demons who were terrorizing even the gods, and how he lifted a Govardhan hill just on his little finger for 7 full days, and how that Kamsa, whom nobody could counter, how he was countered and crushed effortlessly without any weapons by Krishna. And he went on and on narrating the glories of Krishna. He said that who is there who can stand in front of Krishna in battle? Who can be as glorious as him? He is glorious not just because of his status as Vishnu, but also because of the deed that he has performed in this very manifestation. And when Bhishma spoke like this, everybody approved. And yet Shishupal scowled, as did some of his followers. Shishupal said, what is so great about that? There were some wizards, and he killed them. And what is so big about lifting up one piece of rock? I can also lift a piece of rock. Nothing great about Krishna. And he said, this Krishna, his mind is polluted, and those who associate with him, their minds also get polluted. And that's why Bhishma's mind has also got polluted, he says. People glorify you for having taken a vow of celibacy, but I will tell the truth. Actually, you are important. And to hide your impotency, you have taken this vow of celibacy. They one of the worst insults that can be offered to male in general, and to a Kshatriya male in particular, and that too a Kshatriya Kshatriya ruler who is the greatest among the warriors. There's no more grievous insult that can be offered. And a shocked silence fell over the whole assembly. And Bhishma tolerated the insult, but Bhima could not tolerate. And Bhima leapt up like a lion emerging from a cave, about to pounce on small animals and devour them. And as Bhima was about to pounce on Shishupal, Shishupal took out his sword and was ready to fight. But Bhishma caught Bhima on his shoulder, checked him. And just as a ocean cannot go beyond the bounds of the shore, Bhima, despite his fury, could not go against the will of Bhishma. And Bhishma told him, "Oh Bhima, don't worry. When the time is right, Keshava will kill this wretch himself." And he said that, what is his glory? He said that he was already defeated at the time of the Swayamvar, when Krishna took Rukmini. And he said, he is no match to Keshava. It is only because Keshava is tolerating that he is able to go on ranting like this. So Bhishma, although he had been insulted, he had such self-control that he did not explode himself. He could have taken up weapons and easily overpowered and killed Shishupal. But he was thinking of the overall good. He was thinking that if he raised weapons and there was a fight. Now normally, in a sacrifice like a Rajasui sacrifice, it is a very sacred place. And blood should not be shed in that place. If blood is shed in that place, especially if human blood is shed, then the whole sacrifice becomes defiled and it becomes null and void. No fruits come from it. And Shishupal knew this, and that's why he was going on speaking inflammatory words, trying to incite his opponents to raise weapons. Now he in his intoxication was thinking that I have the power prowess to fight with them, but he also knew that if the fire sacrifice, the Rajasui sacrifice arena became filled with, tainted with spilled blood, then the whole sacrifice would be spoiled, and that is also one reason he was goading on. And then Krishna had given a vow to Shishupal's mother, given a promise that I will tolerate his insults for 100 times, but no more. And as Shishupal was ranting on and on, speaking the insults, he lost count. But Krishna did not lose count. And as soon as the count exceeded 100, Krishna said that this person, right from his childhood, has been insulting me. But I have tolerated him. But today, after honoring the word that I gave to his mother, he has exceeded a count of 100 for blasphemy. And today, I will kill him. And immediately Krishna summoned Sudarshan Chakra. And Sudarshan Chakra appeared and just discharged it. And it just whizzed past the arena, right across all the watching warriors. Shishupal had his sword raised up. And he tried to move his sword to stop the Sudarshan Chakra. But Sudarshan Chakra came with such blinding speed that his sword was rendered powerless against it. And right in front of everyone, the Sudarshan Chakra performed a bloodless head surgery. Head transplantation. The head just knocked off. And Shishupal fell down dead, but no blood was spilled. That was the miraculous way in which Krishna saved the sacrifice of Yudhishthir. And he maintained the honor of the arena, sanctity of the arena. So here Bhishma glorified the Lord of his heart and considered the glory of Yudhishthir more important than his own glory. And that's why he tolerated the grievous insult and let Krishna, in his own miraculous, inconceivable way, set things right. So Bhishma is seen in the Mahabharata repeatedly as a great Kshatriya, as a knower of Dharma. But in this particular incident, he is also seen as a devotee who is glorifying the Lord. His knowledge of Dharma culminates in knowledge of devotion, of pure devotion. And that pure devotion centers on glorification of the Supreme Lord, His prowess, His position, His amazing abilities. And that's what Bhishma does over here. And then after the Rajasu Yoga was performed, then Bhishma, with a very joyous and jubilant heart, returned back to Hastinapur. But in contrast, one heart was in a state the entirely opposite of joy and jubilance. That heart was the heart of Duryodhana, who was burning with envy seeing the prosperity of the Pandavas. And he hatched, by Shakuni's instigation, an evil scheme of cheating the Pandavas of all their wealth and indeed their whole kingdom by a rigged gambling match. So Bhishma, he is such a powerful ruler that in a fair fight, none of the world Kshatriyas could combat him. But circumstances conspired in such a way that he had to be present and be passive in the sacrifice, in the assembly where the Pandavas were dispossessed of everything and their chaste wife Draupadi was horribly dishonored. And the gambling match was about to take place. Bhishma strongly opposed it, as did Vidura. But Duryodhana was adamant and Dhritarashtra was weak-minded. And Dhritarashtra said, it is just a friendly match. But it was not friendly because Shakuni plundered away all the wealth of the Pandavas from them and even instigated them to bet themselves and bet Draupadi also. So we will discuss this pastime in more detail when we talk about Draupadi. But here, Bhishma could have risen in force and opposed what had happened. But he was orchestrated by the Lord to act in such a way as to demonstrate a glorious truth. What is that glorious truth? Externally, when Draupadi begged to the Kuru assembly to offer her justice, she raised the question that if Yudhishthira had gambled himself already, then does he have the right to gamble me? How could he possibly gamble me? So, when this question was raised, Bhishma, nobody answered. So, Bhishma was forced to answer. And Bhishma said that, actually the laws of morality are very difficult to ascertain. And a wife is always considered to be under the care and the custody of her husband. At the same time, if a person has lost oneself, then one does not possess anything. So, given both these rules, my mind is confused and I cannot tell what is the right. Now, Bhishma is dharmagya and he instructs Yudhishthir and he pacifies Yudhishthir in a situation where nobody else was able to pacify. After all, after the huge bloodshed that happened in the Kurukshetra war. So he certainly knows dharma, but in this particular situation, he by the arrangement of the Lord, was caught up in a ethical crisis, and he couldn't understand. So by the Lord's arrangement, an example of niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means sticking to the letter of the rule without understanding the principle of the rule. So the letter of the rule is, okay, one rule is that a wife is always under the custody of the husband. The other rule is that a person who doesn't possess anything, person who has lost oneself cannot possess anything else. But either way, whatever be the right rule, the far higher principle is that a woman should not be dishonored in the public assembly. And it was arranged by the Lord that Bhishma act in a passive way over there so that a far more important truth could be demonstrated. What was that truth? The truth was that in this world, we may have many protectors, and yet such crisis can come when we will have no protector except the one supreme protector, that is Krishna. So Draupadi had her five powerful husbands, and she had such elders like Bhishma, but still nobody could help her at that time when she was being dishonored. And finally, it was Krishna who helped her. So Bhishma, later on also, when the Pandavas were exiled, Bhishma realized that this conflict has gone too far and now there is going to be a war. He tried again and again to counsel Duryodhana, but Duryodhana was beyond listening. And Duryodhana went to Kamyaka to flaunt his wealth. We will discuss the story later, but returned instead being completely dishonored. So again Bhishma tried to give him good advice, telling him, you know, settle for peace with the Pandavas. You know, if you give them their kingdom back, then you can have peace. Duryodhana said, no way I can give the kingdom back. Duryodhana was not ready to listen at all. You know, Bhishma was speaking to him and Duryodhana just was not even paying attention to him. Bhishma realized that the destruction of the dynasty was up. And then, after the 12 years got over, then for 1 year the Pandavas vanished into incognito exile. They stayed in the Virata's kingdom. And the Kurus got a suspicion that the Pandavas might be there because Kichika had been killed and very few people were capable of killing Kichika. So the Kauravas decided to attack Virat. And they sent Susharma, one of their allies, to attack from the other side. And Virat along with his army went to that side to protect. And on the other side, from the other side, the whole Kuru army along with all their great generals attacked. And then Bhuminjay, who was the acting head of state at that time, he came along with Arjuna, who had taken on the garb of a eunuch, a Brihanallah. And Arjuna became the warrior and Arjuna fought. So at that time, when this army was about to have a confrontation, so Brihanallah, 1 year was of incognito exile was over. And at that time, Arjuna made his appearance. He shed off the appearance of a eunuch and started. Took up the weapons and started shooting. And the first thing that he did was, he shot arrows at Bhishma. But not at the body of Bhishma, at the feet of Bhishma. And he shot arrows at the feet of Drona and Kripa, he offering them obeisances and seeking their blessings. And when he blew his conch shell at that time, and he twanged his bow, then Bhishma's heart leapt with joy that, yes, the Pandavas were very well, and they were his beloved Arjuna Partha was there. But how unfair and how cruel was destiny that after 13 long years of separation, he could not embrace the Pandavas, he could not embrace Arjuna, but he had to fight with arrows. So, at that time, Duryodhana thought that the Pandavas have been detected before the 1 year has been over, and that's why they have to go back into exile again. But Bhishma pointed out, Bhishma gave systematic calculations telling how the 1 year has already got over. And he knew that Arjuna would not have made his appearance if the 1 year had not got over. The timing had been perfect and precise. But there are calculations which can be made by different calendars. The lunar calendar, the solar calendar, like that, there are different calendars. And that's why sometimes the same festival is celebrated on two different days. Janmashtami will be celebrated one day by some people and another day by another group of people. But because they are following different calendar conventions. So, between Bhishma, so Duryodhana tried to use a calendar conflict to try to force the Pandavas into exile again, to try to rationalize and say that Pandavas are not complete 1 year. But Bhishma could take it no more. Bhishma said that enough injustice has happened. And actually, fairly the Pandavas have spent 1 year in forest. And now they have appeared back. So at that time was the first time when Bhishma saw Arjuna after 13 years, but then they had to fight. And that was a very heroic fight, which we will discuss when we are talking about Arjuna. But Arjuna overcame everyone, even including Bhishma. He used celestial weapons and Bhishma fought fiercely. Bhishma was proud to see the prowess of Arjuna, but still, because he was Kshatriya, he fought to his full prowess. But Arjuna also fought to his full prowess and Arjuna overpowered Bhishma. So, then Arjuna departed with the wealth that had been stolen and the Kauravas had to go back. Bhishma left that scene with mixed feelings. He was happy to know that the Pandavas were safe and that they had survived the forest exile as well as the incognito period. But he was sad that there seemed to be no signs of the cessation of hostilities. And when the war eventually came about, Bhishma, because of his word of honor to side by the Kuru ruling head, he had to side with Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. Now, at external level, it seems that Bhishma fought because he said that because of he was bound by wealth. He said, "Oh, actually, they have provided me, they have maintained me, and therefore I have to fight for them." Actually, that is a very superficial reason, because actually he was older to them. In fact, he was like a father figure to even Dhritarashtra and a grandfather to the generation of the Pandavas and Kauravas. So actually he fought on the side of the Kauravas because Krishna wanted him to. Krishna inspired him from within the heart to make that choice. Why? Because by fighting on the side of the Kauravas, Krishna wanted him to demonstrate another extraordinary devotional principle. What is that? That no matter how powerful, no matter how learned, no matter how virtuous a person may be, if that person goes against the will of God, that person will perish. So Bhishma, he had no, as far as martial skill was concerned, he had no equal. He had defeated even Parshuram, who had defeated all the Kshatriya warriors 21 times. As far as scriptural knowledge was concerned, he had no equal. He had been trained by Markandeya, by Brihaspati, by Shukracharya, and by many great sages. And he had decades and decades of experience in administration and diplomacy. But in spite of all this, he, when he sided with the Kauravas, he failed. So actually, Bhishma knew that he would maybe misunderstood, that he sought for, that he chose to fight on the side of evil. But he was ready to do that because he knew that was the will of the Lord, and that will of the Lord he was ready to fulfill, even if that meant sacrificing reputation. And how Bhishma rendered an extraordinary service to the Lord by demonstrating the sublime and inconceivable beauty of Virya Rasa on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, as is demonstrated in this picture behind. We will discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.